Number 12, quackers, migratory bird hunting regulations, briefing. Quackers, I know, not do billing, double billing here.
Yes, please.
The things I remember in Latin, or I remember the Latin for all the ducks. That was one thing that stuck. So much as purge.
He brought a bag of duck pepperoni.
Duck pepperoni, huh? And it's platyrrhynchus.
Yeah. All right. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the commission. Thank you very much. My name is Kyle Spragans. I am the new waterfowl section manager here with WDFW. I'm here to brief you on agenda item 12, migratory bird hunting regulations. And since I am new, it's also good for me to walk through sort of differentiating some of the concepts that I'm forced to follow when developing these regulations and seasons for migratory bird hunting, but particularly some of the nuances between how duck hunting seasons and goose hunting seasons are set. Within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Authority, there is a federal framework that sets boards on the earliest opening date, the latest closing date, the limits, and the season length. This is particularly true in the case of ducks, but also holds for geese as well. Within that federal framework, at state discretion, which is what we do here within the WAC, we can be more restrictive, but not more liberal in those within the bounds that are set by that framework. This relates to season timing outside dates. In terms of how that timing runs, as I said, I'm new. I came on board in September, so I got thrown right into how this chain of events runs out. In August, September, the Pacific Flyway Study Committee meets and puts forth those regulations that are being posed within the state. And that includes specifying things like goose zones and any changes to bag limits on geese. That then works its way through the Service Regulations Committee in October, and then the state season selections then go back to the feds at the late April meeting. Within that time, obviously, we're having this meeting now that I can give notice, and then adoption in April. So I want to run through a couple of there's three main proposals that are in front of you. The first one relates to duck population status and season proposals. Again, this works within the U.S. Fish and Wildlife federal framework. That meaning it comes to us in a very set sort of format. For us in the Pacific Flyway, we actually are following now fully implemented, this Western Mallard model. Adaptive harvest management takes into consideration breeding pairs, the health of certain dabbling duck species, in particular mallard, to track indications of how certain stocks are doing. And this has changed over the years, but now we are in this situation now where we follow Western Mallards as our indication of what kind of season can be offered for harvest. This is conducted through an extensive set of aerial surveys, primarily conducted by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service in the Canadian provinces and then over in Alaska. At the same time, they pick up information related to habitat conditions in those along these transects, these extensive transects that are flown everywhere there's color on the map. They pick up information related to habitat condition, red being bad, blue being excellent condition, and in the most part, we're between fair and good, and that's similar to conditions in 2015, so 2016 in the lower right-hand corner. One place to point out is in that southern Alberta, Saskatchewan region, that red blob I'll get to in a second, but that's an area that we keep an eye on. Overall, total duck population is at all-time highs. The graph on the left is from those surveys where they come to a total duck estimate, which is well over 48 million at this point. Of that, about 12 million are mallard, and again, that is why that species is used as this indicator of sort of overall harvest comfort of harvest levels assigned. There are certain species that there are refinements to. Those include pintail, canvasback, and scop. So this also comes passed down through a federal framework, but there are considerations taken into account for each, mainly due to nuances within their breeding ecology and then their total overall population numbers. For example, canvasback has a special bag limit set for it just because we are talking about only slightly over 500,000 birds in most cases. So fully implemented this year for the first time was the fact that Washington's breeding pair survey transects are actually included in the Western Mallard model. Before, it was primarily Alaska and California, but over since 2010, the waterfowl section had worked to align survey protocols to make to ensure that that data could be used in parallel, and so that when the harvest frameworks were passed down, that they accurately reflected breeding stock that then come into our state during harvest seasons. So all that said, those two different areas of the Western Mallard, Alaska across the horizontal and the Southern Pacific Flyway, which includes Washington, actually generate this matrix of selections. And in the case of the Pacific Flyway, we have many more opportunities to land in a liberal season than some of the other flyways. And so similar to last year, we landed in a liberal season framework. How that plays out in Washington is that a liberal season framework opens up 107 days of duck hunting potential, and that the full bag, the seven bird bag limit, can include seven mallards, of which no more could be two female mallard. The season timing of the duck hunting season is set. We are maxed. 107 days is the full allotment, and that also is over, across the full window of potential from running from mid-October to late January. And this plays out on both sides of the state. I mentioned that some of the other species have other nuances. Scop is one of those, and that is why we're in a slightly more restrictive setting for scop, where we are only allowed 86 days of harvest. But the other one that I want to touch on, which is the change, is with pintail. Northern pintail is run through its own similar adaptive harvest management model. That red blob that I pointed out on the map in the southern Alberta, southern Saskatchewan, is the heart of northern pintail breeding range. The red blob indicating that there was bad breeding potential, bad habitat on the landscape, bad conditions, not much water. And the main driver in this model is what the total count during those aerial surveys comes out at. In this case, it was 2.62 million birds. And based on this regulatory framework, that actually sets us into a slightly restrictive, where there's only one pintail per bag. That again comes from the federal framework and the model, the adaptive harvest management model specific to pintail. So with that, we would be having a similar season to 2016-17, with the exception of the pintail bag limit. It would be a full 107 days, with two of those towards youth hunt, 105-day general season, seven ducks to include not more than two hen mallard and one pintail. The diving duck limits, two redhead, two canvasback, three scot remain similar. And our state discretion limits on some of the sea ducks remain similar to last year, two scoter, two longtail, two golden eye, and one harlequin a season limit in Western Washington. So that is the duck.
You talked about the daily limit. I didn't see anything about the bag limit.
The daily bag limit is the seven per day, and then
possession limit.
Possession remains triple that number.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was a precipitous population fall in the 60s. Do we know what happened at that time?
The thoughts are large-scale changes in habitat condition, particularly the crop type in that particular southern Alberta, southern Saskatchewan region. Like I said, the vast majority of pintail do come from that zone. And from that zone, pintail feed into many of the flyways. So we do keep an eye on that. In the Pacific Flyway, we also have the fortune of having a stock of pintail coming down from Alaska, which is much more stable. But the main cause for decline has certainly been that southern...
And the current habitat issue, is it drought or is it more conversion?
This more recent decline, the more recent decline in these last 5 years has certainly been just low water, low precipitation years in that part of the prairies. But overall, yes, I mean, there has certainly just been large-scale agricultural crop changes on both the breeding and the wintering grounds. For example, the change in sort of how California deals with some of their rice agriculture and that sort of thing.
A lot of pintail down in the Skagit.
That is correct, yeah.
Any other questions?
No. Okay. Goose populations. So unlike that sort of very structured part of the duck framework, goose populations are managed slightly differently. There are bounds that are put on what we can and cannot do within goose seasons. And those broader bounds, such as zones and season dates, are proposed in front of the flyway study committee that makes their way to the Pacific Flyway Council and do have to be approved. Within that, we operate based on management plans that are specific to each population or sometimes a grouped population in terms of harvest strategies to ensure that we are addressing both conservation concern and concerns of both breeding and wintering grounds. So I'd like to run through a couple of migratory geese that we have in this state that we certainly keep tabs on. Cackling Canada goose, this is a small-bodied goose that nests up in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta of Alaska. Their numbers were at all-time lows in the mid-80s, as low as sub-30,000 individuals. Since that time, this population has rebounded quite well and is now well over 300,000. The most recent estimate brings the three-year running average, which is what we use as our management cue, at 320,000 individuals. This particular species is prevalent both in our southwest Washington zone, but also in the Willamette Valley of Oregon during the wintertime. With that, we have to balance conservation concerns towards dusky Canada goose. Last year was an all-time high of a little over 17,000 during their count. This count is conducted up in Alaska during aerial survey flights during the breeding season that looks at both breeding total breeding number and flocked individuals. The coloration difference is about two main breeding regions that they survey, and that orange line is the three-year average that we use as sort of our metric to assess trend. In this case, this past year, the total count was just over 13,000, bringing the three-year average to 15,436. As you'll note, that light blue bar, which is the Copper River Delta component of the dusky Canada goose population, is the significant breeding stock of this bird, so we certainly keep tabs on where the numbers are there. Another goose that we keep close watch on is Wrangell Island snow geese. These geese breed up on Wrangell Island, Russia. This is their primary breeding area. There is very little breeding outside of that particular colony. Last year, there was a substantial boost to that number, and this year followed suit. The overall population number is said to be at 300,000 based on the breeding index that they use. There is no biological possible way that that is solely from breeding conditions on that island. There is more and more increasing evidence that there may be immigration from some of the surrounding snow goose stock, but that has not occurred since probably well before the 70s. So this is a new phenomenon. But even with that, how that plays out in the gray line, the Skagit-Fraser winter flock counts that we conduct, we haven't seen that track. It is high. It's certainly above the 70,000 bird threshold now for 3 years in a row. We do not have the count from this past winter. We have the November count, which was at 108,000. That's conducted through a photo inventory that we continue to initiate. But realize that the November count is capturing migrating birds as well. So it will be high. But all indications from past years where we've done that, that number will likely be over 70,000, which has triggered our recommendation to increase the bag limit on snow geese. And the final goose I want to mention, which often doesn't get brought up potentially in Washington, but certainly is one that we keep an eye on, is Pacific white-fronted goose. Again, this population primarily breeds on the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta and the Bristol Bay lowlands. This bird was also substantially in reduced population status back in the 80s, with slightly over 100,000 even prior to that, as low as 50,000 individuals. This population has made a substantial rebound, and is now the three-year average is now at over 600,000 individuals. We do not winter many white fronts in Washington, but the entire population passes through this state. While we may not count numbers on the ground at any one time as very high, they certainly are using this as a part of their corridor of movement between breeding grounds in Alaska and the wintering grounds that are primarily in California and down into Mexico. We do see small periods of sort of migrant peaks early in the fall migration period, and then also in the spring period on their way back north. With that, the proposal is to actually separate out the three main goose populations that we hunt in this state so that the bag limit is no longer aggregate. It would be in combination. What this allows is it allows independent season adjustments in terms of when the timing of that season can be. The numbers parallel the bag limits that are in the Oregon Northwest Permanent Zone, our equivalent with the Southwest Washington Goose Zone. But the intent is that currently when a hunter is out in the field and they shoot their current bag limit of four geese, there's often times in particular parts of the state where they're actually deciding whether or not to give up harvest of one species for harvest of the other. There are certain areas where that is true for snow geese and cackling geese, and there's areas where that's true for cackling geese and white fronts in the early part of the season. So that proposed change would keep Canada and cackling geese at four, a bag limit of four, still with dusky Canada goose closed by the management plan. It would up the bag limit on white geese, snow geese, Ross's geese, and the blue phase snow goose to six, and it would set the white-fronted goose limit at 10, which is the Pacific Flyway framework bounds. While that number on the white front seems exceptionally high for what we visually see on the ground here, there are parts of the state that do see large fluctuations of white fronts moving through, and in particular during spring season on the eastern side of the state, there is more indication that there is movement of early migrant white fronts through. So by setting it at that number, that would ensure no change needed for years to come. The other thing I'll mention about the white goose bag limit increase is, and the separation of these, is that there has been further indication that growing snow goose flocks in both the Tri-Cities area and also around the Shillapoo Savi Island region. The Shillapoo-Savi Island region is said to be around 10,000 snow geese, and in the Tri-Cities, we're still trying to get a good gauge on that, but it sounds like it's tens of thousands of snow geese starting to show up and winter in that region. So again, this is a way to try and get ahead of that and not have to force hunters to choose between Canada or snow geese. It would separate out that ability. So the other goose that I want to mention is with Brant. Brant are another unique management strategy in this state in the way that we actually have to deal with two separate stocks, two segments that we make up the Pacific Brant population. The black Brant, the much darker bird on the left in the picture, they primarily breed on the YK Delta and then on the north slope of Alaska, but also into Canada and Russia. So the black Brant are far more numerous in population size, somewhere on the order of 150,000 individuals, whereas the bird all the way on the right-hand side is the Western High Arctic Brant. Washington is one of the primary wintering areas for that segment of the population, and that population is only about 12,000 birds, maybe. That bird primarily winters in Padilla Bay and Samish, and because of that, there have been set thresholds within the state specifically geared at conservation of Western High Arctics and those primary bays of their wintering range. Elsewhere in the state, such as in Willapa Bay, the primary primary Brant that is in that zone at that time is black Brant. So we have less concern in terms of having to tighten restrictions on that part of the in that county. But outside of that Padilla and Samish area, there have actually been increases in certain counties, and it has been brought to the waterfowl section's attention by both the Waterfowl Advisory Group and other members of the public that these areas that are largely black Brant may actually offer further opportunity than what's currently possible. Right now, only Skagit and Pacific counties are open to any kind of Brant harvest. This proposal would actually add Clallam County and Whatcom County on a very limited three set dates to start with, because we are still held to this as long as there's not more than 25% Western High Arctic Brant. If in those areas we are encountering this other population of concern, we would have to reconsider whether or not opening that those counties to harvest is actually appropriate. So this would open Clallam and Whatcom counties to three set dates, but would also require authorization and a harvest report card, as is already required for the other two counties. And then briefly, the other migratory birds that fall under this. Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
White goose bag limit is white goose, and I can understand it's probably pretty hard to distinguish a snow goose and a Ross's goose in flight. But you only showed snow goose recovery, and Ross's is fairly unusual, at least on the east side, I know. So is there an issue with hunting Ross's?
No. In fact, Ross's goose, again, the primary wintering ground of that population is California, and that population is currently over 1 million individuals.
Oh, okay.
So other states, California, Oregon, and Idaho, have already ramped up their bag limit on white geese, on snow geese. Part of the reason they're able to do that is they have, at least in the case of Oregon and Idaho, less consideration for Wrangell Island snow geese. They just don't get any passing through their zone for any noticeable amount of time. California does get a proportion of Skagit, the Wrangell Island birds that are also in the Skagit region. So they've been more modest with their increases on that bag. But because our snow geese are primarily Wrangell Island, and we are still tied within the treaties with Russia how that population is managed, this increase, the bag limit increase, but then also the separation to encourage additional harvest, is primarily geared at that group. And any other white geese that are moving through are very high populations right now.
Okay, great, thanks.
Yep. Okay. And then just real quickly, the other migratory birds that are covered under this WAC, band-tailed pigeon and mourning dove, no change from last year. So same season structure and bag limits as was before. I did want to touch on a topic that was very clear in the public comment period with regards to the Southwest Goose Zone. I know that I have a captive audience here about this topic, and I'm very glad that they showed up so that some of the differences of opinion and sort of how to structure the season can be presented to the commission. It's prudent to remind that these geese are operating under management plans, and in the case of Dusky Canada Goose, that management plan was just recently revised in 2015. As you saw from the slide, the Dusky Canada Goose is still wavering below 20,000 birds, which is what actually triggers whether or not harvest could reopen. But we are held under these objectives of maintaining Dusky Canada Goose abundance, distribution, and winter survival. That is actually a metric that is being used to guide or to gauge what the current status of the population is. Maximum length and time of the goose season is of concern, certainly to address crop depredation concerns, but also the sports balancing that with sports harvest. And there are costs to this because of these monitoring requirements, both in terms of trying to get this winter survival estimate, which is based off re-sightings of neck-collared birds, and then also a level of monitoring in terms of illegal harvest and the bag checks in those zones are considerations that we have to take into account. And this zone is complex. There's no way around it. To be able to pull off what is now, what will be shortly, the only closed goose population where in the Pacific Flyway, without having to close other sport harvest opportunities, is challenging. Last year, I put up a slide that was from last year's this meeting last year that Don Craigie presented, in which the 2A and 2B portions of the Southwest Goose Zone got combined into one. Currently, it is operating as Goose Management Area 2. What was set out was that there would be still a youth hunt, a 9-day early September season, 9 days in October, and then the remainder of the season running late November to early March. There were other changes in terms of how the public lands were being defined to specify the areas. But the intent of that, again, is to ensure that as a strategy of trying to offset agricultural crop damage, that there are places for these geese to go as an alternative during that time. Because while there are some of the species that we are very interested in harvesting, there is still this Dusky Canada Goose mixed in with them. So a couple points that I wanted to make was, so the why on the timing of that. In looking at it in the management plan, the one point that is brought to light is the timing of migration of these birds. A large effort was undertaken by Alaska Department of Fish and Game to mark several individuals. It was upwards of about 20 to 30, I believe, and mostly from that Copper River Delta group, because that does make up the bulk of the breeding stock. The average arrival date in the Pacific Northwest is about the 31st of October, but where that arrival is when we're talking about that certainly depends on where you're looking on the landscape. But after the 31st of October is certainly when this pulse of Copper River Delta Dusky Canada geese are coming into this zone, which is deemed a vulnerable time. When birds are first settling into an area, that is when they are certainly most vulnerable to harvest. What do we know? Well, certainly in that lower right-hand chart, when there were still check stations and we were able to get our hands on good numbers of birds to look at the composition of harvest, the increases in cackling geese, the small minimas, that black bar, has certainly helped to offset some of the harvest that was being absorbed by something like Dusky Canada geese. So on the one hand, that has served as a dilution effect of where hunting pressure is not solely focused on the bird of concern. There are other birds in the mix. But even with that, we do know that there's still illegal harvest going on. This is that portion of continuing monitoring outside of the check stations that used to exist. The chart up there shows 2 years of check station, 3 years of check station and then the post 2 years. And there hasn't been much change. This is specific to the 2A area where there is a much sort of the effort was very similar. But what's important to point out is that we know there's still illegal harvest, and we know that there's actually people taking advantage of that. In this past year, there were two citations where individuals took two dusky Canada geese to each. There were three citations where the individual didn't even have the authorization. They just went out and shot dusky Canada geese. And then in this last late season, there was an example where on the very last day, a hunter took down a dusky because they're invalidated for the last day of the season. So what? It is a challenge. There's still this challenge, but we are trying to manage that balance between conservation and sport, conservation, agricultural depredation, and sport harvest of these other species. There are changes that could be tweaked right now. As I mentioned, I do have to present any kind of zone changes to through the flyway framework system. However, currently on the books, 2A and 2B still exist. That was supposed to be changed in the last Federal Register, but I asked them to hold off because I was not clear whether or not that was the appropriate way to go. Season timing can be shifted, but that really depends on what we're trying to, what those objectives that we're trying to fulfill. This bar chart down on the bottom was a tool that I tried to use in trying to harness the idea of, well, yeah, it can change. Seasons can lay out different ways, but it from the extreme of that very top one where you do away altogether with a late season hunt, to shifting more days towards the end, that has consequences for different users' perspectives. So there is still the opportunity to change, but one of the things that I'll mention is that these regions have changed many times in the last several years. So to change something this year, moving forward, knowing there very well may be another change to try to properly address it, is something that is a tough one to tackle, particularly when there's differences of opinion of where those days should be shifted to. And on top of that, we do have to maintain some sort of monitoring, as I said, both between the neck collars for winter survival estimates and then also for bags to check whether or not there is illegal harvest going on. And trying to define these appropriate zones and season timing, as I said, to balance both sport, agricultural, and dusky Canada conservation. Seeking input, which has happened to some level, but certainly not across all five counties that are wrapped up into this zone, is absolutely important and something that I would plan on taking on going into this 3-year season setting process. But from public, regional, and enforcement together, because this zone, which does have approximately 1,500 authorized goose hunters every year, is one that is very popular, and it also puts sports hunters in a bit of a bind. If you shoot a goose, you are invalidated. And right now, duskies are closed, so it actually carries more weight than that. But some sort of stated strategy of how many days per week, perhaps. Mr. Gordon, who was here earlier, made mention of the fact that perhaps the number of days in a week is actually more important than changing the bag limit in certain circumstances. That's true. That very well could be. If the intent is to try to still provide opportunity to sports harvest, multiple sports harvest opportunities, then yes, that's true. Just upping the bag limit doesn't necessarily solve both problems at once. But the final two pieces I'll mention are related to this trying to track harvest. Currently, we require the authorization, but we don't actually require a harvest reporting card. I don't know how that would be received. All the other authorizations related to brant, snow goose, sea duck, and bantail pigeon currently require a mandatory harvest card. That didn't need to happen when there was the check stations. That wasn't something that needed to be followed up on because people physically went through this check station. But now we're left in a position where to actually get good numbers on harvest is not easy. It requires district biologist time, it requires a hired technician, and it also requires enforcement in many cases to try to keep tabs on what if with any change, whether it's bag limit, number of days, is really happening as a result. The final thing that does need to be addressed is this clarification of public lands intent that occurred last year. It's been brought to our attention that there are some public areas, such as county lands and potentially DNR land, that was being taken advantage of this late season, and maybe further clarification is needed on trying to close those for the intent of keeping birds off private properties. So with that, I hope I've left enough time for input, and I certainly would take any questions that you have.
Thank you, Kyle. Any questions from the commission? Well, we do have a number of folks to sign.
Can I?
Yep.
Yeah, sorry. I think you've summed it up really well. It's always challenging when we have competing needs, and they're pretty clear in this instance, the ag land protection, the opportunity, and then the dusky protection. And it sounds like you've had a lot of good thinking, you know, providing protected areas in the public lands. What I'm trying to get my head around is it doesn't necessarily take harvest to protect the agricultural lands. It takes moving the birds. So is there some way of thinking about it so that we can meld the opportunity and the hazing and accomplish both?
I agree. I think that was where Mr. Gordon's points were well taken. It may be that so currently we only hunt 3 days a week out of the main portions of the hunting season. Realizing that the number of days, the 107 for geese, can be split up into three sections. That was what I was trying to show there. That the very early part in September is a different piece. But at most, it can be split into three windows. It is possible that during certain windows, maybe we consider upping the number of days per week. That is where trying to address that through some sort of strategy of, okay, if duskies are above this point, then we actually feel like it, you know, maybe is appropriate to go that way. Right now, that's not written anywhere. The when to do that is not a current strategy. But your point's absolutely well taken in terms of you don't have to actually shoot birds to cause an impact. And that goes both ways. You are trying to offer this hazing opportunity for the agricultural lands. But at that same time, if you're hazing duskies to areas that are not set aside, then we may actually have further impacts on duskies themselves. So trying to balance that piece of it is the challenge, because this tool suddenly starts going away if we continue to have negative impacts on duskies.
Good luck.
Yeah, thanks.
We do have a number of public input on this item. I will call you up two at a time.
I'd like to talk about the number of days that we as goose hunters are allowed to hunt in Region 2, which is the area that we're talking about, Clark County and Cowlitz, I believe. When I asked the Pacific Flyway managers why we only got 54 days, they said that was a Washington decision. And so I asked, well, how does Oregon do it? And Oregon says, they said that the Oregon managers, looking at their science, the number of birds that they have in this, as the duskies, and there's more duskies in Oregon than there are in Washington, wintering here. And then the MOU that has been signed, they said that they're allowing their hunters to hunt 107 days. Well, we get to hunt 54. So what does that mean for us is we have less hunting opportunities. Later on in the season, when the birds start coming up from the Willamette Valley, staging to get ready to go north, they're coming over to our side because they're getting hit hard by the Oregon hunters who are hunting 7 days a week, and we get to hunt 3 days a week. And that primarily is the problem. The depredation that's occurring down in that area, I'm the coordinator for the Fazio Farm. I've been doing that for 10 years, and we're seeing an exponential increase in the number of birds that are coming over to our side because they're not going to go to Oregon and get hammered over there. And most of these birds are cacklers, not duskies. They're mostly cacklers that are staging for this trip up north. So we would like to see hunting increase at least during that last period. That last depredation period, Oregon hunts 40 consecutive days. We get to hunt 12. You're not going to keep the geese off the field that way. So we're down there having to shoot firecracker rounds and doing other things necessary to keep the geese off the field. But if we can increase the hunting even 1 day or 2 days a week during that period, then I think that would go a long way to helping the farmers with their depredation problem. Is that my time up?
No.
Oh. Okay. So anyway, we look forward to working with Lyle, and perhaps we can find a way for this late hunt, especially to get these geese off the field. Not just Fazio's. We're talking about Laglers and all the other dairy farms that are all up and around the Columbia River that are getting hit hard by these lawnmowers because they eat the grass just like lawnmowers. Thank you.
Thank you. Steve Gray, please.
John Livermore.
Pardon?
How about John Livermore?
No. Yeah. I call you all two at a time. So you're next.
Yeah, sorry. Thank you for allowing me up here, Chairperson and Director. I'm up here also to talk about the late, the goose hunting down there in Area 2. I completely concur with what Mr. Richard Hodery had talked about, and also in that down in that area there. I am also representing the Vancouver Wildlife League and the Southwest Washington Waterfowl Association up here at this time. That is quite a few hundred hunters. And also about the goose numbers, I'm definitely in the concern of the conservation of the dusky goose also. I'm real aware of it and I'm concerned about it. But also, I think the goose hunting could also be allowed, like I heard talk of possibly different dates, different times, when the duskies are no long, not quite here in big numbers. For instance, the end of October, the 2 weeks of October, which we used to hunt years and years ago, and the first week in November is kind of a low time for duskies. I live there. I know. I'm real familiar with it. I've worked for the Fazio brothers for off and on for 45 years. And so... You know, that's about what I have to say. You know, like Mr. Hodry had said, there's 44 seconds between the flyways between Sovies Island and Schillipool area. 44 seconds. They get their 107 days, and we get our 54. So I timed it. I know. Thank you.
Yeah.
Steve Gray, most of you know me, I'm sure, from enough fish things, but we do take some recreational time and like to hunt. I couldn't agree more with these our previous gentlemen. I don't know either of them, but 107 days is what we should hunt. We don't have many people hunting. You have almost no juvenile people hunting. We have certainly got a lot of geese. 10 of us, and a couple, four or five of the guys are here, own a set of fields, hundreds of acres, called Honkers Incorporated. We spend, I'm sure, $10,000 a year fertilizing, mowing, spraying for geese. We also put a bunch of cattle in those fields. We had a meeting here back in 15. Don Craigie had a little meeting, and I came to it. It was in August. And he said, we're going to make some changes. And we were changes were that we were going to have hunt 3 days a week. We were going to have the goose time start 30 minutes after duck time. Anyway, the changes we went through were good changes. But Don didn't say one word. He said, we're going to hunt later. But we didn't say one word about we're going to rip the heart right out of middle of goose season. If Mike Cincy said, I'm going to tell you what, you got 3 hours to go shoot a limit of geese, when would you go? In our area, in Area 2B, Long Beach Peninsula, Pacific County, you would go the last week of October, the first 3 weeks of November. What have we done as managers? You've removed all of that. The importance to us and our 10 members in our club, 7 of them live basically up at Aberdeen. They get up in the morning at I can't even imagine when, 3 o'clock, and drive all the way down to Long Beach to hunt geese and all the way back. If they were to decide, and I think they're about there, to look at this, there's 3 of us locally, and those guys said, let's develop this into housing. It's one of the nicest goose establishments in the state. Let's put it back into housing because we can't come late. We can't get any time to hunt in the middle. They've taken that. That's what will happen to us. And what I guess what I'm saying, there's no question when duskies come strongest, and that's the late part that we have. We looked at the late part of the season. We've hunted it both the last 2 years. We killed literally 0, killed 3 for the whole club. That's what happens in your late hunt. We definitely need to do something with predation. We've got the largest farmer in Area 2B here with us. He's going to tell you, hunt every day. So are we. Open it up for the 7 days in September, then hunt from the middle of October to the whenever in January. Leave it open. I also am on the Cranberry Ocean Spray Board, and we have a lot of geese in the cranberry bogs. We have problems because you can't get the plastic material into bogs. But probably 4 or 5 of us hunt most of the cranberry bogs. We work with the cranberry growers and do that because we're one of them. So that's the only 2 farm things you have, is the goose situation in cranberries in our 2B area and on the pasture land for cattle. We definitely would like to see this thing go to 107 days. We'll pick the days when to hunt, like our gun club. We'll probably hunt 3 days, Saturday, Sunday, Wednesday. The other days, we'll go to the cranberry areas. We'll solve the predation problems. Another predation thing you should do to help the farmers with the cattle is move the date. I think it's probably March 1st that they can get a deprivation tag. They should move that to the end of the 1st of February. Thank you.
Thanks. And Robert Rose, please. And Steve.
I'm Steve Reistica. I'm a lifelong resident in Nacelle, Washington. I concur with what Steve is saying about the timing of this thing. There's a couple of unintended consequences of last year's decision. I'm primarily a public land hunter. By moving our public hunting into this depredation period, if you don't have access to private land, you've basically lost a third of your goose hunting opportunity. A number of us aren't members of goose clubs, and we don't have the chance to go to these kind of places to hunt. The other thing, Ms. Wecker probably can tell you later when you talk about these kind of things, the dusky population skyrockets during the depredation period in the Nacelle area. We've gone out several times just to look at them. I go out with Nathan, one of the biologists, to count red collars, and you don't dare try and shoot a goose in the late season, the depredation season. There's no way we can assist the farmers during that period of time with lethal means. Our harassment program would be much better and much more effective But taking the November time and putting it into that depredation permit, in my opinion, is discriminatory towards us that can't access private lands. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Lance Gray, please. Okay, I'll go ahead. I'm the largest rancher in Pacific County that Steve was talking about. I have three ranches 7 miles apart, and I've hunted geese myself for over 65 to 70 years. I'm 80 years old now, whether you believe it or not, but I'm pretty lucky. Anyway, we have one ranch right out of South Bend. It's 300 acres, and the geese can jump out into the bay and come back, and it's just plain destroying that ranch. We were hazing them every year as day season was over, and we'd put some Zon guns out, and we had some master hunters a couple of years that worked real well with us, and we could kind of minimize the damage, but most of it occurs right in November when the geese first come in there, and the hunters, they come and hunt for 3-4 hours or 6 hours and go home, and half hour later it's loaded with geese. And this extending this season into March just destroyed our whole program to try to protect the grass so it would grow in the spring. We had to wait till the goose season was over, and then we're in the middle of calving, and this year is a disaster for rainfall, and we're up to, you know what, in mud. And we haven't been hazing yet, and we need to get started, and we'll probably start this week. But I would like to see that season go back, like Steve said, for 5 days in September or seven, whichever you pick in September, and then start it with duck season and run it till it ends. And then we can jump in there and do some hazing and try and minimize the damage, because the hunting season doesn't seem to minimize the damage where I am. I know there's places up the river, the Willapa Valley and Chehalis and whatnot, where they can run the geese out and they'll move to another area. But in my area, those geese just stay there. And the only opportunity we have to really shoot geese is when new ones come in. The old ones, they know what a goose sell. We got the best decoys you can buy, and they won't even look at them. And that's the problem with 3 days a week. You get a good rainy day where you got a chance to have them come into a few decoys, and you can't go, and then the sun breaks out, and they shine like a silver dollar out there, and there's no goose going to look at it. And so my goose hunters are getting awful frustrated. But anyway, I'd like to see the season go back to where it was and has been traditionally, and that would help me a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. And Brad Wood, please. And Lance.
Hello, I'm Lance Gray, goose hunter, Pacific County. The first thing I'd like to say is I'd like to see that separated in, back into 2A, 2B. Things that work in our area probably don't work for the area in the Columbia River, vice versa. You know, we see that in both areas. We sat up here, and I'm certainly not against the dusky goose population saving. And we talk about tickets, fines, people shooting a dusky goose. But we had a slide just before that talked about shooting pintails. And we've got this huge problem with pintails, but we're allowed to shoot pintails 7 days a week, and you can only shoot one. So that's the law. So to stop the goose season because we can't shoot duskies, I mean, that's the law. If somebody shoots one, we have enforcement. They'll take care of that problem. for me, yeah, I'm also one of the members of that organization. I'd like to keep hunting, you know, geese for the next 40, 50 years. Most of my guys aren't quite as young as me, but so I'm hoping that we will get this thing changed back and get it right and hunt 7 days a week, middle of October, to wherever it runs. You know, we can have the early season in September for 7 days, but why not hunt the 107 days? We're hunting 50 days, 54 days, whatever it is. I hunted the late season, never shot a bird. We've got tons of birds. We've got 1,000 birds in our field. You couldn't get one to even come close to you. So it was a complete waste of time this year. We hunted 1 day last year, and it was a complete waste of time in our area last year. It may not be in the other area, but for Pacific County, It's a waste of time.
Thank you. Andy, Whitby, and Brad.
I'm Brad Wood. I'm here. I'm the Southwest Director of the Washington Falconers Association, and I was asked to come here on behalf of the association to thank you again, each and every one of you, for your time and for your reasonableness in dealing with anything to do with falconry. So we will take every chance we get to thank you. There's not many of us, maybe a couple hundred in the state. I've been hunting, fishing, and a falconer for 50 years now. Great, beautiful waterfowl season. I might take one duck a year. We have absolutely zero impact on the resource, but we like to get out a lot. I was asked to come not only to thank you, and I don't see you're talking about pheasant and other things, but the only thing that we, it's a minor point, is our possession limits on grouse and pheasant. We are probably half of what gun hunters can have. Even though we rarely ever kill one or two, we want to be equal with them. And the argument could be put forth that falconers are given extended seasons. We get out a lot, but maybe 10% of us ever actually take game. So that was the comment I wanted to make. I certainly hope when I'm 80, I'm still hunting, like the landowner here. I wish I had land. And that was the main statement, is just about the possession limit for falconers. It's been going on for years. It's not a new thing. So just wanted to make that statement, and thank you very much for thinking about us on occasion. Thanks.
I went out with Dan Pike. It's a fascinating and the care that you guys give to your birds is incredible.
Yeah, you know,
you have your wife and kids living in a shack. The birds would be.
Now stop that. I have been married 40 years this year, so my wife has put up with me. And you brought that up. Danny Pike was the guy that got hit with avian flu 2 years ago, and they almost came in and killed all his birds. We are thankful that this state has not been hit with avian flu in poultry, but I just read today that two other states have in the Mississippi Flyway. So we are very lucky at this point. We watch that almost weekly.
Do you ever take youth out on your hunts, like have a Falcon Youth Day?
You know, that's exciting. I try to take people out. I teach them about falconry, but we haven't. That's something I can mention to them. Falconry is the hardest hunting sport to get into. You got to have a sponsor. You got to have 2 years of apprenticeship. It's incredible, and I would really like to see that ease up.
I'll tell Dan that I challenge him to have all of you to have a youth day, and so we can get some visibility for it.
Dan is too busy hunting to spend time.
No. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Louise Farah, please, and Andy.
Okay. Commission, most of these guys have covered what I have to say on the goose hunting deal. But in area, as we see on the map, I would like to see it go back to maybe 2B. So then we could go back to the 107-day season. I've had zero success in the late season. You don't give a week early in September, but run the rest. Let the rest of the season run its course during the duck hunting season.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Andy, in a different vein than normal.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Lois, we do have your handout. So, that's right here. I'll hand that out now.
Yeah, my name is Lois Farrar. I live in Grace Harbor County, and I have sympathy with these hunters. I agree with them 1,000%. I'm an avid goose hunter. But the problem we have, and I told Don 2 years ago that this was never going to work. And there's a big difference between the Wynoochee River Valley east than where these gentlemen hunt along the coast. The main time of crop damage occurs from the Wynoochee Valley east. It starts in the third week of December and runs clear to March 10th. There's farmers on that list that hired U.S. Fish and Wildlife hunters to kill them geese before we went to the February-March season. And now that we went to this late season, they haven't hired them this year yet, and they didn't hire them last year. And this day thing, this is a bunch of you-know-what. I mean, I've checked with Oregon. I've got Oregon, Idaho, everybody's pamphlets here. And why we only get 50-some days doesn't make a bit of sense. You cannot move geese hunting them 3 days a week, trust me. And there's farmers now in this valley that cannot plant a fall crop from the Wainuiuchi River west, which is about 8.5 miles to the Thurston County line, 2 miles wide. You can't plant a fall crop. It's impossible. Because the geese will wipe you out when they go to the green grass or the crops. They're in the corn until about the second week of December. In that section of the valley where they hunt geese, there is totally different than what happens in that section of the valley. And I talked to Don about it for the 2 years, and I met Kyle. They need to split this zone at the Wainuiuchi River east, make a 2A zone or a 2Z zone, because them farmers there are losing thousands and thousands of dollars every year. And another thing, I talked to the head guy in Oregon last week for 2 hours on the telephone. They hunt 100 and some days in Oregon. They have 13 counties that they are responsible for to represent the dusky goose. They have 24,000 registered hunters. 24,000. They don't have a dusky problem. They don't feel that they're not enforced in 13 counties. And, you know, surely there's not 24,000 guys hunting every day, but they have that many registered dusky hunters. So I don't understand why this state is using an excuse to me when I call. They say, well, we got to spend extra money because we got to have extra people in the field. There is no requirement from U.S. Fish and Wildlife, because I've talked to them twice, that require this state to have extra people in the field on these dusky hunt days. That's a false from this state. And I'm just saying, these farmers now, they can't grow nothing from the Wainuiuchi River east, nothing. We all went from winter wheat to barley.
Thank you, sir. And Kyle, I think you have a lot of good info here and input from...
Yeah, we certainly a lot of information to go on, certainly a lot to balance there. And as Steve was just mentioning to me, there has been contact with enforcement when we had the meeting in Pacific County, but certainly to try to balance those different needs in what is currently the two zones possible right now, which could be changed structurally going forward in this upcoming September meeting. That's certainly what I'll be weighing. So
you all know how to get hold of them.
Yep. Thank you.
Yes.
Maybe I misunderstood this, but the carving up or the bisecting and dissecting of that one region, the 2 and 2A and 2B, seems to be a big issue. Did I hear somebody say that the fact that we combined them meant that we went from 107 to 54 days, or did they used to be handled separately?
They were handled separately. I mean, it's the bottom line. 2A, 2B had separate sort of seasons, and that's what happens when you structurally change defined zones. You can then manipulate seasons independently from each other. Right now, combined as two, anything that happens to Pacific County would have to happen to Grays Harbor County, would have to happen down along the river. It is possible, because it's still in the framework, to go back to 2A, 2B. But as I said, anything that happens to Pacific County would happen to Grays Harbor County in the current setup. So to make a change, knowing that there might be a rezoning in the future, means at least two consecutive years of changing seasons. But the one piece I'll say about the number of days, number of geese, while it is true Oregon does hunt 107 days, that dilution effect I was talking about, they have hundreds of thousands of other geese mixed in with their
duskies, which are a higher total number of duskies on the Oregon side, whereas the number of duskies we have on this side are mixed in with tens of thousands. So in terms of proportionality, we are far higher than Oregon, and that is a consideration we have to take into account. But
thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. That brings us